Gentlemen of the jury, you are the judges of the evidence to be laid before you. Be just and fear not, for the true administration of justice is the foundation of good government.
Famous jury trials, dramatizations of cases taken from actual court history. The names of persons and places have been altered to protect the identity of those concerned.
The People versus Arthur Phillips.
Tonight's famous jury trial is the case of the People versus Arthur Phillips. And most of you have heard of the so-called unwritten law. So-called because juries frequently refuse to convict the husband who kills his wife's paramour on the mistaken supposition that tradition upholds them. In tonight's trial, you will hear one of the most noted of these cases, the trial of Arthur Phillips, indicted for murder in the first degree after he had shot and killed Harold Moorhead. Both the defendant and his victim were prominent figures in public life. Both were well-born and well-to-do. Listen carefully to the evidence and ask yourself how you would have judged the defendant. Guilty or not guilty? Arthur Phillips began with the prosecution's charge to the jury, outlined by the district attorney.
And, ladies and gentlemen of the jury, there is no question whatever as to the cold facts of this case that Arthur Phillips, on the afternoon of the 23rd of May last, deliberately shot and killed Harold Moorhead in broad daylight on a street in this city. We will prove to you, ladies and gentlemen, that this brutal murder was premeditated and carried out to its ghastly conclusion with malice aforethought. We will prove to you that the facts of this case will warrant but one verdict. Guilty of murder in the first degree. I call the first witness for the state, James Booth.
James Booth. James Booth.
Your occupation?
I am Mr. Phillips' butler.
Do you remember the 23rd of May last?
Yes, sir.
Tell the jury what happened around 3 o'clock in the afternoon of that day.
I was in the hall, sir, when Mr. Phillips came rushing down the stairs and went into the library.
Who was in the library?
Mr. John Potter, sir, a great friend of Mr. Phillips.
Did you hear what was said?
Well, sir, Mr. Phillips seemed extremely agitated, sir. He cried out in an excited voice, "He's outside, Harold Moorhead. He just walked past the house." He said something else about his wife and Mr. Moorhead that I didn't catch. And then the door closed and I didn't hear any more.
What happened then?
In a few moments, Mr. Potter hurried out of the room and left the house without stopping to put on his hat. I then went to the library to see if there was anything Mr. Phillips wished.
Yes?
When I came into the library, Mr. Phillips had taken a pistol from a drawer and was loading it. He didn't say anything. He finished loading the gun, went past me into the hall, took his hat and coat, and went out the front door.
And then?
Perhaps a minute later, I heard several shots. I went outside and saw Mr. Phillips at the corner. He had a pistol in his hand. A man was sprawled on the sidewalk in front of him. Mr. Potter was standing nearby.
Did you recognize the man who was shot?
Yes, sir. It was Mr. Harold Moorhead.
All right. No more questions. Your witness.
Mr. Booth, you say that Mr. Phillips seemed very much excited when he came downstairs, exclaiming that he had seen Mr. Moorhead.
Yes, sir.
And later, when he went into the library, you saw him loading a pistol. What was his manner then?
Very strange indeed, sir. He was muttering to himself. I couldn't hear what he was saying. It was just gibberish.
Like that of an insane person?
Objection. The witness is not competent to answer.
Sustained.
What was his manner after the shooting?
He seemed calmer, but it was as though he was dazed, sir. Like a man walking in his sleep.
Thank you, Booth. That's all.
Call Sarah Fickett.
Sarah Fickett. Sarah Fickett.
Miss Fickett, what were you doing on the afternoon of May the 23rd?
I was out walking with Mr. Moorhead that afternoon.
You were friendly with Mr. Moorhead?
We were engaged to be married. Of course, my family didn't approve because he was a lot older than I am. He was over 40 and I... Well, I don't tell my age, but you can see there was quite a difference.
Yes, sir.
And he had beautiful manners. He was a real gentleman and so much fun to be with. He had the kindest eyes. He was so very handsome and vital. He was so much alive. I can't believe he's dead.
Spare yourself, Miss Fickett. We don't have to go into all this.
I want to go into it. I want to say that it's a wicked lie what they say about him and Mrs. Phillips. He loved me and he was going to marry me. The other is a lie.
Now, Miss Fickett, when you were walking with Mr. Moorhead that afternoon, did you pass the Phillips house?
Yes. Oh, if I'd only known it. We could have taken some other walk. If I'd only known it.
Yes, yes. And now, after you had passed the Phillips house, what happened?
We stopped to chat with some friends who happened to pass by, and then we went on. We just reached the corner when Mr. Potter came up to us. He drew Harry, Mr. Moorhead, aside.
Did you hear what they said?
He said, Harry, can I speak to you a minute? Then they went to one side, and naturally I didn't listen.
How long did they talk?
A minute or two. And then I heard sounds of running feet. It was Mr. Phillips. He was running towards Harry.
Hold him, Johnny. Don't let him get away.
I have no idea of running away, Phillips. What do you want?
What do you think I want? Revenge for what you've done to me.
Oh, put down your pistol. I'm not...
Oh, don't shoot again. Don't shoot.
And you saw it all, Miss Fickett.
Yes. He kept on firing until the gun was empty.
Now, Miss Fickett, I know how very hard this is for you, but do you remember what the defendant was wearing?
He had on an overcoat and a hat, I think. I wasn't noticing things like that.
Of course not. That is all, Miss Fickett, unless Mr. McDaniel has any questions.
No questions.
Call Lionel Davies.
The prosecution called a number of physicians and other eyewitnesses to the shooting of Harold Moorhead, all of whom agreed on the essential details. Then the prosecution closed its case, and the defense attorney began the case for Arthur Phillips.
May it please your honor, ladies and gentlemen of the jury, I will not harry you with the story of what this man, who is now on trial for his life, has suffered. This is no fit occasion for eloquence. I cannot use a husband's shame, a husband's anguish, a husband's love. I cannot use these sacred emotions as vehicles for my eloquence to try and move your hearts. No. If the plain, unvarnished facts cannot move your hearts, then no eloquence of mine can do so. I will try to outline this case for you as simply and as briefly as possible. The defense contends that the defendant shot and killed Harold Moorhead while temporarily insane. To prove this case, we must prove that Mrs. Phillips was unfaithful to her husband, and he was, in fact, temporarily insane when he shot Harold Moorhead. We will prove these points to your complete satisfaction. I call my first witness, John Potter.
John Potter. John Potter.
Mr. Potter, where were you about 3 o'clock on the afternoon of 23rd May?
I was at the house of the defendant, Arthur Phillips.
You were a close friend of the defendant?
Yes, very close.
Tell the jury what happened, please.
Well, Mr. Phillips appeared in great agony of mind. He told me that he discovered that his wife was unfaithful to him and named Harold Moorhead as the other man.
Did you know Harold Moorhead?
Yes, I...
What happened, please?
Well, Mr. Phillips had left the room for a few minutes. Then he came bursting in. His manner was very agitated. He was almost incoherent. He was searching for his pistol, saying he'd get Moorhead.
And you left him there?
Yes, I realized I couldn't reason with him. He was past that, so my one idea was to get to Moorhead and warn him before Arthur found that pistol.
And did you?
Yes, Moorhead was walking with a girl. He was about half a block away when I got outside. I caught up with him at the corner and drew Moorhead aside and warned him.
Did he appear surprised at this warning?
He didn't have a chance to say anything. At that moment, Arthur came running up and he shot him.
Mr. Potter, you stated that it would have been useless for you to try to argue with Mr. Phillips when he announced that he was going to shoot Mr. Moorhead. Did you mean that Mr. Phillips was beyond the reach of reasonable argument?
Well, I meant that Mr. Phillips' mental condition was such that nothing short of physical force would have stopped him. He wasn't reasoning. He wasn't aware of anything but his own anguish and hatred.
Your Honor, I object. The witness is not competent to make a diagnosis of the defendant's mental condition and even less competent to draw conclusions from it.
I agree with you in principle, Mr. Paul, but I feel the substance of the answer is admissible as evidence. Let us not waste more time now by having the witness repeat his testimony in legally correct language. I overrule the objection.
That's all, Mr. Potter. Your witness.
Mr. Potter, there are one or two points I am not quite clear about. You made no attempt to stop Mr. Phillips from finding his revolver.
No, it wouldn't have been any use. I thought the best thing to do was to warn Mr. Moorhead.
Strike out everything after no.
But surely several minutes had passed since Mr. Moorhead had passed the house. Wasn't your actual purpose to find Mr. Moorhead and detain him until Mr. Phillips could arrive on the scene with a pistol and shoot him down in cold blood? Isn't that what you did?
No, I did not. That's not true.
Your Honor, I object to this whole line of questioning. The witness is not on trial.
Overruled. The question is proper in cross-examination. Proceed.
Mr. Potter, didn't you separate Mr. Moorhead from his companion and talk to him until Mr. Phillips arrived?
Yes, to warn him.
How unfortunate for Mr. Moorhead. That is all.
Order! Order!
As the cross-examination of the defense's first important witness came to an end, a recess was called for lunch. We will continue with this dramatic trial in just a moment. Assembled, the trial proceeded. A number of witnesses were called to prove that Mrs. Phillips had been unfaithful to her husband with Harold Moorhead.
I saw Mr. Moorhead and Mrs. Phillips go to a house right near mine on State Street. They'd been gone there together for about 3 months before Mr. Moorhead was shot. Lots of people know about it, but it wasn't none of my business.
I rented the house on State Street to Mr. Moorhead. He never lived there, but apparently used it at odd times. At least it had the appearance of having been occupied for short periods.
Well, I saw Mr. Moorhead and Mrs. Phillips together all the time, and I thought they were very indiscreet. Of course, I didn't know anything was wrong, but it seemed to me...
I call the defendant Arthur Phillips.
Arthur Phillips. Arthur Phillips. Arthur Phillips.
Mr. Phillips. I wish with all my heart that I could spare you this painful ordeal, but it cannot be. I ask that you make your answers as full and as frank as you can, regardless of your personal emotions.
I'll do the best I can.
That's fine, Mr. Phillips. Now, will you tell the jury what was your first intimation that your wife was unfaithful to you?
It was on the Thursday before the shooting. I received an anonymous letter.
I show you a letter and ask you if you recognize it.
Yes, sir, that's the one I mean.
I offered an evidence, Your Honor.
No objection.
It may be received and marked.
Will you tell the jury what was in that letter and what you did after you received it?
The letter stated that my wife was unfaithful to me and named Harold Moorhead as the other man. It said that they were in the habit of meeting in a certain house on River Street.
Why don't you show the letter to the jury, Mr. McDaniel? This testimony isn't necessary.
I will show it to them in a moment. Go ahead, Mr. Phillips.
Well, in the ordinary course of things, I wouldn't have paid any attention to an anonymous letter. But this one was so detailed, it'd be so easy to prove or to disprove.
Up to then, you had no suspicion of your wife?
None whatever.
Go ahead. You investigated the charges made in the letter?
Yes. I learned that Mr. Moorhead had, in fact, rented the house named in the letter, and that a woman who answered to the description of my wife was in the habit of meeting him there. That night, when my wife was in her room, I went in and tried to find out the truth.
Wednesday afternoon, did I go out? Why, yes, I think so. Why?
Where did you go?
Oh, just shopping.
You didn't go over to River Street, did you?
Arthur, you're so strange tonight. Why would I go to River Street?
To meet a man at a house there. Number 639.
What are you talking about?
Did you, Sylvia? I can't bear not knowing. I got to know the truth. Did you go there?
Well, yes. As a matter of fact, I did.
Oh,
don't slobber like an hysterical schoolgirl. I'm not a bit sorry for you, not a bit.
How could you do it, Sylvia? Don't you love me at all?
No, I don't. Oh, I put up a good act. It was the easiest way. But if you'd ever thought about me instead of having your mind squarely on your own sickly little emotions all the time, you would have known I didn't love you. Couldn't.
You sound as though you hated me.
I detest you. Now get out and leave me alone. Get out of this room.
You wouldn't have believed the things she said. The things she went on shouting at me. She'd never loved me. It was all just an act. And I thought she was happy.
Yes, yes, I see. What did you do then?
I don't remember very clearly. I made her sign a confession later on. She didn't object. She said she was glad everything was out in the open.
Mr. Phillips, I show you this letter. Do you recognize it?
Yes. That is the paper my wife signed.
I offer it in evidence, Your Honor.
Objection. That is a privileged communication between husband and wife.
Your Honor, there would have been no point in having this document written at all if it was not intended to be used. Mrs. Phillips tacitly agreed that it was not a privileged communication when she agreed to sign it.
Your Honor, a husband cannot testify against his wife or the wife against her husband. There are no ifs and buts about it. That document cannot go into evidence.
I agree with you, Counselor. It cannot be offered in evidence. Go ahead, please.
Well, Mr. Phillips, tell us what happened the next day, please.
None of it's very clear. I can't tell you what I went through. My whole life seemed to have crashed around me. Without any warning, I learned that my wife, whom I loved, hated and despised me. It was all so ghastly and unbelievable that by my mind refused to comprehend it. I don't remember very much about that awful day.
Do you remember shooting Mr. Moorhead?
Yes, I shot him. I saw him from the window. Something snapped inside of me. I was out of my mind. I don't remember a thing until I saw him dead at my feet on the sidewalk and I was still pulling the trigger on the empty chambers of the gun.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Phillips. Cross-examined.
Mr. Phillips, you say you saw Mr. Moorhead from your window. Then what did you do?
Well, I guess I ran downstairs to tell John Potter.
You told him you were going to kill Moorhead?
Well, I must have if he says so. I don't remember.
And then?
I don't remember.
You got your pistol, didn't you?
Yeah. I must have done that.
Loaded it?
Oh, I must have. It was kept unloaded. I guess I snatched it out of the drawer and I put in two or three bullets.
And meanwhile, Mr. Potter, instead of trying to stop you, left the house and went out to delay Mr. Moorhead. Now, what did you do?
I ran out of the house.
Without hat or overcoat?
No, I did put them on.
Then went on out, caught up with Moorhead, and shot him dead.
Yes, I told you that.
Mr. Phillips, for an insane person, doesn't it strike you that your actions were remarkably sane?
I don't know what you mean.
Why did you take the time to load that pistol and put on your hat and coat? Wasn't it because you knew Mr. Potter would prevent Moorhead from escaping?
No! No, I didn't. I didn't.
Weren't you perfectly sane when you loaded that pistol, put on your hat and coat, and left the house with the avowed intent of killing Harold Moorhead?
I don't remember. I don't remember anything about it.
That is all, Mr. Phillips.
Character witnesses were called to testify on behalf of the defendant, after which both sides rested. And then, at the court's direction, the defense attorney began his summation.
Your Honor, Mr. Foreman, ladies and gentlemen of the jury, the defendant Arthur Phillips is charged with murder. And why? Because he shot and killed the man who destroyed his home. I ask you, what other course was open to him? There was no law on our statute books under which that man could be punished. It never occurred to the defendant to seek legal redress because there was no adequate legal redress. And what did the defendant plan to do? He planned to divorce his wife quietly and with as little scandal as possible. But fortunately or unfortunately, the inscrutable ways of Providence caused Harold Moorhead to pass the house of the aggrieved husband shortly after this husband had learned of his wife's infidelity. Imagine for yourselves the husband's feelings at that moment. Already he had gone through all that the human heart and mind could well stand. And when he saw the man who had blasted his hope and love, his very life indeed, can you believe other than that at that moment reason gave way and some divine power guided his actions until the bullets had put an end to the foul creature that poisoned the very earth whereon he trod? If that be murder, gentlemen, then tell me what is justice.
The prosecution will sum up.
May it please your honor, ladies and gentlemen of the jury, I think all of us are in agreement that any man learning what the defendant did about his wife would be upset. But insane. Do the facts warrant an assumption of insanity? What did the defendant do when he saw Mr. Moorhead from his window? He went down to his friend John Potter and told him that he was going to kill Moorhead. That is admitted. It is evidence. What did Potter do? Did he try to stop the defendant? No. He went out and stopped Harold Moorhead. There is not sufficient evidence to indict Potter as an accessory to this crime. But do not the facts warrant but one conclusion? That when the defendant announced he was going to kill Moorhead, John Potter agreed to help him. Was Potter insane? Certainly not. Neither was the defendant. His actions were as reasonable and as rational as any man's. He went and got his revolver, loaded it, put on his hat and coat, and went out to kill his victim. Why the hat and coat? That is the most incredible touch of all. Would a man, insane with rage and with a desire to kill, paralyzing all his other faculties, would such a man delay his vengeance by stopping to dress himself properly for the street? It is inconceivable. It doesn't fit any hypothesis except one, that the defendant knew there was no hurry, because he knew his victim was being delayed by John Potter. And when he was properly attired, the defendant went out on the street and shot his unarmed victim dead. If ever there was a story of cowardly, cold-blooded murder, that is it. You may say he was justified in killing such a man, but I say to you that no man is justified in taking the law into his own hands. No jury can disregard the law, which provides that anyone who kills another human being shall pay the penalty. You must uphold the law and the respect of people high and low for the law. The alternative is anarchy. Your duty may be painful, but it is clear. You must bring in a verdict of guilty as charged.
If you had been sitting on that jury, how would you have voted? That Arthur Phillips was temporarily insane when he shot Harold Moorhead, or that he was, however justified, guilty of deliberate murder. We will bring you the verdict of the jury in just a moment.
It's May.
6 hours after the jury had retired, they re-entered the courtroom prepared to deliver their verdict.
Ladies and gentlemen of the jury, have you reached a verdict?
We have, Your Honor.
How do you find?
We find the defendant, Arthur Phillips, not guilty.
The trial was over, and the principals were faced with a heavy, difficult task of rebuilding their lives after the scandal and mental anguish of the trial. Mrs. Phillips went to live with her parents, where she died a few years later, forgotten by the world. But Arthur Phillips, vindicated by the jury's acquittal, went on to become one of his country's prominent diplomats. A man who lived down the stigma of his trial, in which he was fortunate enough to be found not guilty. Famous jury trials. Trials, the drama of the courts drawn from actual courtroom cases. This is a Grace Gibson radio production, directed by Lawrence H. Cecil.